providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio.
Thank you for tuning in for this Unity Partner Program. Unity Online Radio partners with spiritual leaders from organizations whose mission and messages complement Unity's. We are pleased to bring you this program on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
For joining us for the Michael Chatman Giving Show. Each week, Michael will highlight the joy of giving, as well as shed light on some of today's humanitarian heroes and donors in both the private and corporate sectors. Michael will show you why giving of yourself is truly the best gift you can receive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Michael Chatman Giving Show, where each week we highlight and interview fundraising and philanthropy experts in the charitable sector. I am so excited about this guest today. I'm just a huge fan. It's almost like I've been stalking his work for the last few years. And I want you to know about him. His name is Don Mackey, has been working with communities across North America for over 40 years, from Los Angeles to rural Iowa. He is the co-founder and co-director of the National Center for Rural Entrepreneurship. Don and his center team help communities find their pathways to prosperity. One area of work is Don is engaged with community development philanthropy, which is the focus of our interview today. Welcome to the show, Don.
I'm delighted. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, let's just delve right into it because we've been promoting this segment heavily on Twitter and Facebook, and I just want you to share a little bit about your journey working with communities large and small.
Well, you know, Michael, I've been working in community economic development for over 40 years, and about 25 years ago, we'd been working with communities, and it always seemed after we'd done visioning and strategic planning, then we'd have to take a lull to figure out how to find the resources to make something happen. And I was paying attention to some things going on in South Dakota with the start of the South Dakota Community Foundation. Bernie Christensen was kind enough to have me come up to Pierre. We spent a day together, and he really opened my eyes to how community philanthropy could really help communities move forward and do the things they need to do to build great communities. And so since then, we've had the opportunity to work with communities across the country, helping understand how philanthropy can be developed and how it can be used to support the things that they want to do, whether that's helping young people get to college or building community centers or dealing with youth that are at risk.
Well, that's fascinating. So that our audience can get a working definition of community philanthropy, in your opinion, what is it?
Well, you know, it seems obvious, but it's really not, Ben. There's a couple of parents for the term, but Janet Topolsky with the Aspen Institute is probably the person who really began to put a sharper image on this. And one way to think about it is it's the intentional marriage of what communities are trying to do with community economic development and really thinking about how philanthropy can bring not only financial but human resources to bear to support that. So that's the merge of the term. And while, you know, most communities are engaged in philanthropy and most communities are engaged in development, most of them still haven't connected these two things together in a smart and strategic way. But the ones that have, it's really been transformative.
So in what ways can communities explore community philanthropy as a primary development game plan?
Yeah, and I'm going to use the example of a community that my wife and I are headed to today. We're in transit to a small rural community in south central Nebraska, Red Cloud, Nebraska. This is the community that was home to Willa Cather, the author, and many of her books are based on Red Cloud. And like so many communities, you know, Red Cloud was founded to support area farmers, and as agriculture's consolidated, you know, the need for Red Cloud has kind of dissipated. But this is a community where there's people who love the community. A lot of folks have grown up there, moved away, still care about the community. And it's really been interesting to watch how the community has, number one, committed to its future, done the things it needs to do, and particularly this heritage tourism opportunity where thousands of people find their way to Red Cloud off the interstate to look at the prairie that Willa Cather featured in some of her books. And how do you make that into an economic development opportunity where it can create jobs for people who want to live in the community? And so part of it is Red Cloud, over 20 years ago, committed to this idea of community philanthropy. They've created some great visions of how do they acquire some of the historic buildings on Main Street, restore those so that there's places for people to stay. There's meeting rooms. There's a wonderful museum. They've restored their historic opera house. And, you know, over the course of the last 20 years, over $10 million has been gifted and reinvested. And as a result, this community is positioning itself for a brighter future.
You know, we're talking about this whole issue of rural economic development. I find it fascinating. You and I talked about just before the show started about Brian Fogel, who is the CEO of the Community Foundation of the Ozarks in Springfield. I know Brian has recently initiated a program called GROW, which is Growth in the Rural Ozarks. And fascinating program. Three communities were selected to be a part of this this program to help incentivize economic development in their communities. And one of the things in talking to Brian Fogel about this issue of brain drain, this issue of finding entrepreneurial talent. So even the few companies that are in these smaller communities, the number one complaint that they have is we just can't find good people. So my question would be, since you work with entrepreneurs, how can philanthropy help communities grow entrepreneurial talent?
Well, a couple of things. One is, there's kind of this myth out there that we can't use charitable dollars for community, for economic development. And while there's certain things we can't do, particularly when we get into entrepreneurship development, there is so much we can do with philanthropic dollars. For example, we have communities that have endowed business coaches, and their position is fully paid for out of an endowment, and what they do is work one-on-one with area entrepreneurs to help them figure out how they can build a greater business, employ a few people, and contribute to the economy of their community. And so that's the first thing, is communities and philanthropy really need to step back and understand that there's a lot we can do with charitable dollars. I think the second thing that's really interesting is there is this connection. If you think about it, between potential donors and entrepreneurship. A lot of the people in our communities, a lot of the people who've grown up in our communities and gone away, they've achieved wealth by being in business. And this has been their life. It's been their vocation, and they're interested in, they care about this idea that, you know, we can create businesses that create jobs and tax base and fulfill, you know, our desires to do meaningful work. And they also represent donors who are very interested, at least that's what we found, to give back to communities to help fund programs and strategies to support that new generation of entrepreneurs that are going to really contribute to the economic well-being of our community. And so across the country, there's this really interesting movement around entrepreneur-focused economic development, with the idea is start with the people who are in your community, start with the people who are already in business and the ones that want to be in business. Take the time to get to know them and figure out what they're trying to do, and then say, how can we as a community begin to help you? We think that's the foundation of all economic development today, but particularly in rural areas where maybe we're not big enough to attract an industry. And so this is our mainstay for creating economic opportunity.
Donna, you raise a very interesting point. Again, carrying my conversation further with Brian Fogel from the Community Foundation of the Ozarks, I had the opportunity to go into one of the communities that they are serving called Sarcoxie, Missouri, population 1,300 folks, much like the community you talked about in Nebraska. They're on a main highway, And they had a town hall meeting about 2 weeks ago. And one of the things that they were dealing with, Don, is this issue of should we focus our efforts around trying to attract a Google to our area that is going to create some sort of plants and create all these jobs to get us going again? Or do we look at the talent that's already here and help those businesses reach a level of growth so they can hire more people? Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I approach it from a real practical standpoint. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and in part of my career, I was involved in business attraction, and so I appreciate that that has a place in economic development. But, you know, when you're talking about a community of 1,300, the business attraction game has really changed over the last, since World War II. The opportunity is more limited, and the game's much more competitive and expensive. And so for most communities, they simply don't have the wherewithal to be in that game. But what they do have are people who are committed to their community, already living there. And, you know, if you're willing to invest a little bit of time, talent, and treasure in helping those folks figure out how they can make a better business that's going to create jobs and tax base and a sense of opportunity in the community, that's just foundational. So I never encourage any community to not look at attraction if they think they have an opportunity, but I encourage every community to say, you know, there are these opportunities already in your community, and if you'll take a little bit of time to work with it, you can make a difference. The other thing about entrepreneurship is, particularly for smaller communities, and I would define that as any community from 50,000 or less, the scale of development really fits the community. So when a small entrepreneur adds two jobs, the community has the housing base, the school resources, the healthcare resources to accommodate that kind of growth. So if you think about a community of 1,300, if they have 10 businesses that are each adding one job, the community can accommodate that, and it creates a more diverse economy. So I think it's foundational for every community to really look at entrepreneurship as the most important investment in economic development.
Very smart. Very smart way of approaching it. Now, there's another piece of your work, too, Don, that I want our listeners to know about, and that is your work in the area of transfer of wealth opportunity analysis. Now, how does that research fit into your work?
Yeah, it's been a real fascinating area, because I would have never dreamed that it would have the impact that it seems to be having. You know, almost 15 years ago, Boston College did a study called Millionaires in the Millennium, and it was kind of this groundbreaking research that talked about the intergenerational transfer of wealth, you know, the accumulated estates of one family transferring to the next generation. And the numbers were massive. At that time, they projected $41 trillion, and we've since updated the numbers following the Great Recession, and the number's actually, in our opinion, closer to $75 trillion. But it's a number that, how do you get your head around that? What does that mean if, you know, you think about the communities that Brian and the Foundation of the Ozarks works with. And so our first study was for Nebraska. Maxine Mal, who was our lieutenant governor, said, "Don, what does this mean for, you know, Hooker County, Nebraska, you know, a county with less than 1,000 people? What does it mean for the state of Nebraska?" So that got us into doing this first study. And since then, we've done about 65% of the communities in the United States. And so we've had a chance to do a lot of this research, including, that's where we got to know Brian. We did research for him as part of a project, and that gave us a chance to take a look at the great work that they're doing. But something about understanding that we have this opportunity, and I was just in some really struggling communities in Appalachian Kentucky, and we were talking about this, and while these are not rich communities, there is wealth there, there are donors there, they care about their community, and if you put that case out to them, they have and they will give back. And that's the power of this. And what the transfer of wealth does is it gives people an idea of the magnitude of that opportunity. And something happens when communities have numbers. They set goals. And when they set goals, they tend to act on those goals. And then you wake up one day and you've got a tiny community like Shickley, Nebraska with 650 people, and they've got $5 million in endowments in their community foundation. And that's transformative. It's helping them do really important work that's making that community better. That's the magic of it, and the research simply has given people a sense of what that opportunity looks like so that they can set goals and then go to the hard work of actually making this happen.
You know, this is becoming a Brian Fogle Fest, but again, I go because I know you've done some work with the Community Foundation of the Ozarks around transfer of wealth. I have to ask you this question, Don, and that is, I have seen the presentation on multiple occasions that has been pushed out through the network of affiliated community foundations. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the areas where people get stuck, they invite a bunch of people in, they see the data, they're very impressed by the numbers, and they don't know how to leverage it. It's like, where do we go from here? Now that we see how much wealth is going to be transferring from one generation to the next, what do we do with this research?
You know, I think this was part of our discussions 2 weeks ago when I was traveling through Appalachian Kentucky, is how do you act on this? And I think, first of all, there's a lot of experience now across the country. If you think about in my home state, the Nebraska Community Foundation now has $100 million in assets that are spread across over 200 communities throughout rural Nebraska, that there is a way to make this happen. But I think part of it is we overcomplicate it. I had the opportunity to work with Bob Sutton in South Dakota, and Bob's just a remarkable individual. And when Bob got his transfer of wealth research over a decade ago, what he said is, I'm going to go to the poorest and the smallest counties in South Dakota that don't have this kind of philanthropy. I mean, these are giving people. They support their church. They support the Boy Scouts. But the idea of leaving part of their estate is not something they've been doing. And he says, I'm going to bring people together, sit down, communicate this opportunity to them using the research, and then put this proposition in front of them. If they would begin to identify a list of 10 to 20 families in their area that they think care about their community and would be interested in giving back, he said, you know, I'll come back and I'll go with you to visit these folks. Now, of course, some of those folks were sitting around the table as he was having this conversation.
Right.
And in that five-year period, they generated over $60 million of charitable gifts to the endowments of those communities in the poorest and smallest places in South Dakota. And so what I counsel communities to think about is understand your opportunity, work with a good group like Brian Vogel's that has the expertise on how to work with donors, and then you got to bite the bullet and you got to go out and start talking to people. You've got to start talking to people. You've got to tell them, if you give, this is how we will use that money to make our community better. I mean, there's some basics here. But I think what Bob Sutton demonstrated is this doesn't have to be this strung-out, complicated process. At some point, you just got to go down and sit down with folks, present this opportunity for them to give back to a place they love, and get on with it.
You know, I'll be curious to know, since we're talking about the transfer of wealth data, is the research indicating any difference of how you would share that information or leverage that information in a rural community versus an urban community?
Well, the wealth profiles, I mean, if you think about the example that you shared in the intro, you know, Los Angeles is a very different place in some ways than, you know, a rural community like, Dubuque, Iowa. But in a lot of ways, the process is not different. I mean, the community foundation that serves Los Angeles, part of what they've done is they've broken this down into neighborhoods. And so they're going into low-income Hispanic neighborhoods, helping them build funds for their community. But they're also working with, you know, the multimillionaires that are part of the entertainment industry. And so part of this is each community's got to kind of understand who their potential donors are, what they care about, how do you have to have that conversation. But beyond that, the process is the same. Maybe it's a little more complicated. Maybe there's a little more opportunity in Los Angeles. But what you know, Nancy's doing with the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque is the same kind of things that the Community Foundation of Greater California is doing in Los Angeles.
I want to go back to the example that you used in South Dakota, because I found that just fascinating how they were leveraging this transfer of wealth data. The 60 million, I think that's the number that you threw out, that they were able to generate through endowments. Was that through life insurance policies? Was that through real estate, land? Can you speak to that?
Well, in South Dakota, it came from three sources. A lot of it was Bob Sutton help ranch and farm families, you know, where the average age of the owner-operator is over 60 years old, learn how they could, as they transition that farmer ranch to the next generation, how they could pull out a quarter section or a section of ground, gift that, and transition that. So Bob understood that a lot of their wealth was tied up in land, not in cash, and so he helped those donors figure out how they could make these gifts and still ensure the transition of that land to the next generation. And, of course, there's some tax benefits in that. Also, there's this old adage in farm country that if you want to stay in agriculture, in good years you take your profits and you invest in the stock market and you buy life insurance and you do other things so that in the lean years you got assets that you can survive bad commodity prices. And so Bob found a lot of these folks had followed that adage, and they had been putting money away in the stock market for years. They had highly appreciated stock values. And, of course, when you do estate planning, that becomes a major opportunity for gifting because of the tax implications. And so it was primarily land, but it was also this fact that you've got prudent people who have taken care of their finances over their life, and they had stock life insurance capabilities, and that was part of the gifting.
Excellent. What's new? I know you got some things you're working on down in your garage at the center. What's new coming out of the Center for Rural Entrepreneurship?
I think probably the most exciting thing is we're partnering with the Aspen Institute out of Washington, D.C., a group called the Community Strategies Group. I mentioned Janet Topolsky. Janet's one of the thought leaders in rural philanthropy in the country. And we've got this growing network of, first of all, foundations that are working with rural communities and organizations like, you know, the Community Foundation of the Ozarks. And so we're working with those networks to say, how do we take the lessons that Brian's learned or Jeff Yost in Nebraska, and how do we share it with other foundations that are beginning to say, we can do this in our part of America? So that's one thing that I'm really excited about, because I think that network is really beginning to come alive. The second is this idea that philanthropy can be the new way we fund economic development, particularly if what we're going to do is support people who are already in our community that want to grow businesses. And so there's a whole network of foundations now that are really getting into the economic development space. The community foundation that's called Encourage in Wisconsin Rapids, you know, that economy imploded, Michael, when the paper mill closed. And Encourage has become the economic redevelopment force in that community, and it's been transformative. So those are the two areas that I'm really excited about that I think means that this success just won't be in pockets. Eventually it's going to cover more communities, more of America, which means it'll truly become a movement that'll make a difference.
We're coming up about the last 4 minutes of the show. I told you it's going to go really, really quickly, Don, but I got to interject this question. This is from one of our listeners on Twitter. And the question is, how do you engage national funders to take interest in rural economic development?
Oh, boy. I don't know if 4 minutes would cover
that,
it.
That may be another show, Don.
Yeah. I've worked at that level. And quite frankly, at this stage in my life, if I can help a small town figure out how to develop their own donors, to find the money that they need to do the work that they want to do, that's where I'm going to put my energy. I think there are some national funders who care, but they've not stayed for the long term. They've come in for 5-10 years, done some good work, and then they leave. And that kind of leaves everybody in the lurch. And so I'm not saying we shouldn't do it, but for me, if I can help one community figure out how to do this, I think that's a much better use of our time and energy than trying to convince a large national foundation that they should care about rural, because that's a tough sell right now.
Yeah, speak to this, and I'm going to give you about a minute to touch on this. When you walk into a community, specifically a rural community, that has almost accepted their fate that, here we go, another strategic plan, and you could tell they've been somewhat beat down, what do you say to them to lift their spirits and get them to believe again?
What I look for is, are there a small group of people who still care, who are not willing to give up? And that's where it starts. And in every community, there's always a small group of people. And part of our job is, how can we help them help their community, realizing that there can be a better outcome? There can be solutions that can make a difference. It's still hard work. But the leverage point is finding those three or four or five people who, for whatever reason, haven't given up. They still have hope, and they're willing to help their community figure out that they can have a better future. I think that's true in families. I think it's true in communities. That's what we look for, and those are the folks that we try to initially help with the research, the process, et cetera, because ultimately they're going to be the ones that are going to convince their community that it's worth waking up in the morning, going to work, and making a difference in the future of these communities.
Thank you so much. I'm afraid I'm going to have to end it there. This has been a fascinating conversation. I may need a national funder myself, Don, to give me more time on the air.
Yeah, but, well, we'll help you.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We've been talking today with Don Mackey, the president and CEO founder of the Center for Rural Entrepreneurship in Lincoln, Nebraska. Be sure to tune in next week to the Michael Chapman Giving Show, same time Thursday at 11 a.m. Central on Unity Online Radio. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Michael Chapman Giving Show. Join Michael at 11 a.m. Central on Thursdays as he helps you uncover the joys of giving, featuring today's best-known philanthropists, private donors, public foundations, and a host of others. To give really is to receive. Peace in the presence of conflict. Love in the presence of hatred. Forgiveness in the presence of injury. These words are easy to say. It's challenging, though, to live them in everyday life. After all, I can make my words and actions peaceful, but I have no control over the words and actions of others. That's true, but think about it. If you, then I, then others, one by one, responded in love in every situation, the effect would be like the wave you see spread across a sports stadium. It would go on and on, gaining momentum as it moved through the people around us. I can let peace begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.